Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm Ryan Grimm. In the weeks after October 7th, AIPAC declared that it was going to launch an assault on the so-called Squad, planning to wipe out what they said was a growing threat to the U.S.-Israel relationship inside Congress. After spending millions in a failed effort to stop Summer Lee from winning her seat in 2022, they set their sights on her for removal in 2024. Yet last week, she won in a landslide. The group's next targets are Jamal Bowman in New York and Cori Bush in St. Louis, both of whom they've managed to recruit challengers against. To talk about those races and also how they managed to fend off the threat against Summer Lee, we're joined by Alexandra Rojas, a founder of Justice Democrats and now its executive director, and Usama Andrabi, who was working very closely with the Summer Lee campaign throughout the race. Usama and Alexandra, welcome to Deconstructed.
Thanks so much for having us.
Alexandra, let's start with you. I want to start with the Pacific race that got us talking about Justice Democrats' pushback against AIPAC, and that's Summer Lee's recent victory. Tell us who Summer Lee is and how you guys kind of first met Summer.
Yeah, I mean, Summer Lee has been a transformational leader in Western Pennsylvania for over the past 5 years. You know, we ended up recruiting her to run for Congress, but for years before that, she, alongside so many organizations and fellow leaders in Western Pennsylvania, have been building a movement that has been preparing to overcome not just AIPAC, but Republican billionaires that, like Jeffrey Yass, who spent in this race, but have historically spent lots of money fighting against public education and a number of other causes in Western Pennsylvania. So when we met Summer, it was after she had helped elect alongside a huge local movement, the city of Pittsburgh's first Black mayor. Before that, she had started a pretty transformational movement to the school board and Woodland Hills School. And then, you know, after all of that, she ended up defeating a 20-year incumbent to become Western Pennsylvania's first Black state senator. So she is a history-making powerhouse organizer. And, you know, once we started talking back in 2021, it became clear that regardless if, you know, incumbent Mike Doyle, who was the incumbent at the time, were to retire or not, she was going to be someone that this district could not only believe in, but ultimately elect as one of the people that has been just doing the work in the community, showing up year after year for all parts of the community. So that's how we came into connection with her back in 2021 before she even decided to run for Congress. And we helped push her with over the edge with talking about the level of resources that we were prepared to get behind her.
In 2020, you helped add two squad members, you know, Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush. And I'm curious what the conversation was like with Summer Lee in 2021. You know, A, there's a incumbent Democrat, you know, who'd been there for, you know, many years that didn't stop her from running in 2018, nor did it stop her from winning the legislative seat in 2018. But it's a tall order. Like you said, she was doing so well at the local level, you know, her movement really kind of taking over the power structure in Pittsburgh. What was the argument that you made that, you know, she ought to now, you know, jump to the federal level? And what was the reticence and what do you think pushed her over the top?
Well, I mean, just to take a step back, you know, our mission at Justice Democrats, just to reiterate, is to recruit and run progressive candidates from working class backgrounds to grow the block of squad members in Congress this cycle and beyond. And so like in, you know, some of the previous races you mentioned, whether it was Summers, Jamal, or Cori's, Justice Democrats plays a really unique role in the way that we closely and directly interact with the candidates from candidate recruitment all the way to when AIPAC decides to throw a punch at the very, very end. And so I think for us, really looking at places like St. Louis or places like Allegheny County in western Pennsylvania, where despite huge establishment, local establishment infrastructure and sort of political, you know, people that have been in office for decades, they had been able to overcome that. And it was also a situation where, you know, the communities that Summer had been representing have been largely left behind. The other reason for us too is that there's often a big national narrative about Pennsylvania. It's a swing state. It's very important to Democrats across the board, obviously, and in a moment like we're heading in now in a presidential year, but also just in general for, you know, the progressive movement that we're fighting for. This is an area where, you know, this is a heavy union town. This is a big place of environmental racism and the fight for a Green New Deal, or what it looks like to make sure that we protect everybody. And so in this particular race, it was, I think, a match of the infrastructure that the local movement has been building that had been, you know, ready to overcome establishment structures, with also, you know, a big national need to get more champions in Congress that are going to fight for all of our communities, not just if it's a blue district or not. We know that, unfortunately, incumbents get, especially in the Democratic Party, very relaxed after being in Congress for decades and not really feeling a real sense of urgency. And that's what Summer and the whole movement in Pittsburgh was doing. They were bringing urgency. They had elected the first state senator, Black woman, in Western Pennsylvania in the state house. They then elected the first Black mayor to represent the city of Pittsburgh through Ed Gainey. It was a natural succession, I think, to then make history by electing the first Black congresswoman to Western Pennsylvania.
And Usama, in order to understand the ferocity of this 2024 race, I think we got to go back to the 2022 race. So Doyle does end up stepping down. Lee runs. And of course, whenever there's an open seat in a blue district, it's going to be a crowded field. But she was winning, you know, running away. With, you know, a month plus left in the campaign, polls had her up, 25, 30 points. And then kind of out of nowhere, AIPAC jumps into the race with millions of dollars in spending. What was that like? How did that shape the race? And, you know, how'd you guys respond?
Yeah, I mean, it was overwhelming, to say the least. And it was kind of a really, not only in Summer's race, but for Democratic primaries writ large, kind of a moment-changing time where you all of a sudden won AIPAC, which had prior to that cycle never been involved directly in electoral politics, did not have its own PAC and super PAC, came out, had a PAC, came out, super PAC, and decided that they were going to spend $5 million in a race. And Democratic primaries are usually not that expensive, especially not open seat blue Democratic primaries. And so we saw just airwaves and mailbox flooded with disinformation and attack ads from, you know, the vaguely named United Democracy Project, that no one had any idea what this was about. And it kind of took us all not by surprise, because we had a feeling that AIPAC, you know, warned us, they started the super PAC, they were going to come in. But I don't think any of us understood the sheer quantity of attacks that were going to come in. And, you know, what we saw was kind of the GOP billionaire-funded super PAC playbook, which is don't talk about the issue you care about, just talk about how these people are not good enough Democrats. And so you had a primary with, you know, five people in it and one Democratic state representative, and somehow she's the one who wasn't a good enough Democrat and would not be a good enough ally to President Biden. And that was what the attacks were. There was no mention of Israel. There was no mention of Palestine. None of that. Just kind of recycling old attacks against Summer that were obviously often dog whistles that we kind of see throughout AIPAC's attacks against Black and brown politicians across the district. And so, you know, we were not the same well-funded campaign that we were this cycle. You know, we were desperate to raise a lot more money to get on TV, to get more on mail, and to also talk to the press to kind of expose to them in the nascent stages of who is actually funding these attacks. Because Western Pennsylvania, you know, if you had asked them 2 years ago who AIPAC is, they would have been like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so we had a kind of a concerted effort to talk to local press and say, hey, look, the people who's funding this super PAC is AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. Their ads don't mention Israel, and their donors are often Republican billionaires. And that's what we saw. You know, if you looked at the FEC filings last cycle, you could see Bernie Marcus, a Trump mega donor, giving $1 million to UDP, and then 2 days later, UDP spending $1 million in PA-12. And so it was a pretty clear through line. And, you know, that's kind of what we started doing there, is just trying to expose where these attacks were coming from to the best of our ability while staying true on the values and not letting kind of, you know, millions of dollars in attacks allow us to and allow Summer to compromise on the value she was running on. There was no hiding from supporting Palestinian rights or Medicare for All or a Green New Deal.
And it set up this interesting dynamic. And maybe, Alexander, you can take this, because as you said, you know, your organization is all about kind of pushing the Democratic Party and the Democratic establishment in a more populist, progressive direction to truly represent, you know, the working class values that it claims that it ought to be representing. But the interesting dynamic came, and Summer Lee talked about this with me in an interview that she did, I think, maybe in 2022, where because she was getting hit with not being a good enough Democrat, the response that turned out to be effective was to put up an ad with her on stage with Joe Biden. And with enough money behind that, and there was an independent expenditure coalition that came in toward the very end and was able to kind of boost the message as well, you know, that seemed to do the trick for enough voters who had gone wobbly under this barrage of AIPAC spending, saying that Summer is, you know, radical, who can't be trusted, and is going to, I don't know, what is she going to do, impeach Joe Biden or something, or not support his agenda in Washington or something along those lines. So, you know, how long did it take for you guys to pick up on what is sort of an ironic dynamic for, you know, an insurgent organization that is often kind of challenging the power structure of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And Usama, who worked closely with the campaign on responding to a lot of these, I mean, we all did, but can speak more to this. But I think, like, we were pushing back against flat out lies, right? Summer was the only democratically elected official in the race in 2022. And they were darkening her skin and telling her she wasn't a sufficient enough Democrat. And as you've talked to Summer, we as elected officials, as progressives, right, we have to be holding our leaders accountable, even when they are within our own party, while also working with them to deliver real results right now for poor and working people that need their lives changed. And so during that race, like, that's what we did. And I think we learned a lot coming out of that race in particular about the types of attacks that we can expect from AIPAC, Super PAC, United Democracy Project, which, you know, Usama will know, did not mention Israel once, even though that is where all of their funding, the motivation of their supporters goes to. And so we ended up right after this primary really taking a concerted effort to study how these ads performed, like the ones that Summer did, the ones that United Democracy Project did, to really understand how Democratic, to answer some of the questions that you're bringing up, which is how Democratic voters feel, not just about AIPAC, but also these types of messages that are coming from them. So that way we can understand, like, one, we can meet Democratic voters where they're at around answering lies, basically, that are being put out, with how Summer, despite also being critical of President Biden, has worked very, very closely with them. That's progress. That's a good thing when our elected officials do that, while also studying what were the messages that turned people off. But yeah, Sam, I don't know if you want to share a little bit more on that.
What did you find when you studied, like, what worked in 2022 and what didn't work, and how did that inform your approach in 24?
Yeah, I think what we found more than anything, you know, was that AIPAC pedals in kind of disinformation, and the greatest kind of resolve and response to that is to just kind of speak the truth and expose the truth of what's going on, not only by saying, all right, you guys want to spend millions of dollars talking about who's a good Democrat, let's talk about that 9 of the top 10 mega donors to your super PAC are Republican billionaires and Donald Trump mega donors. Let's talk about that, you know, you guys endorse 109 insurrectionists and 200 plus anti-abortion extremists. And also, let's name that, you know, Summer Lee is running in a Democratic primary. She's a Democrat. She's a Democratic elected representative, and she's running to be the Democratic representative in Congress. And it might sound like, you know, to outside viewers who know Summer and see it, it's just like, obviously she's a Democrat, but when you are a voter in PA-12, who average voters do not care about everything that's going on in Washington, D.C., and they see $3.5 million of ads that say this woman's face next to Donald Trump and Marco Rubio, you are going to start believing what you see from a super PAC called United Democracy Project. And so really that was kind of the approach there, was to just clarify the truth here. It's just saying like, look, this is a Democrat. She obviously supports this president who's our current president. And also that doesn't mean that she's going to compromise on any values. She's going to push this party further to where they need to be. And she's going to push for things that maybe the president disagrees with, but that's the point of a Summer Lee in Congress. And that's the point of the power that they've built in Western Pennsylvania. The work that they've done over the last few years has not been, let's figure out how we can just, you know, build the most lukewarm blue wall. It's how can we transform Western Pennsylvania to be the model for progressives across the country? And now you have a Congresswoman Summer Lee, Mayor Ed Gainey, and a County Executive Sarah Innamorato, who have all replaced what used to be a far more establishment right-wing sort of government. And that doesn't happen overnight. It takes years and years of building that I think Summer has led on.
Yeah, I thought the ads that you guys ran, or that Summer Lee's campaign ran, were kind of instructive on that point. They do hit some populist themes like, you know, not beholden to lobbyists and corporate PACs. But in general, they feel like fairly standard kind of populist Democratic ads. You're going to get the job done.
I've known Summer Lee since 2017. I know that Republican-funded super PACs are lying about her again.
Because in Washington, I've been on the front lines standing up to GOP extremism, fighting to restore our abortion rights, taking on MAGA extremists like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and saving Social Security and Medicare from GOP budget cuts.
In just one year, Summers brought over $1 billion back to Western Pennsylvania.
Money for housing, money for schools, money for clean air and water.
But nowhere in those ads do you hear Green New Deal, Medicare for All. It's not a kind of Bernie Sanders 2016 or 2020 campaign ad. So what is the thinking behind that messaging?
Yeah, you know, I think it is that kind of combination of messaging, and it's talking about, you know, what we saw so often in the cycle, in last cycle, was that the big establishment say, you won't be able to get anything done. You won't have seniority on these committees. You won't be able to actually deliver for this district. And that was kind of the biggest criticism going into summer, going into Congress. And so to kind of combat that, you know, one, not only did from the beginning on the official side, that office churned out work, you know, had an amazing kind of constituent services and casework, opened a ton of satellite offices in parts of the district that no one used to give a shit about. But also, you know, they delivered legitimately $1 billion in just one year to that district. And she had one of the most productive freshman years out of any freshman member of Congress this Congress. And it was not just, you know, here's a check to some organization you don't know about. It was delivering money on the priorities she ran on. So it was delivering money for clean air and water. It was creating thousands of green jobs and investing in green manufacturing. It was expanding affordable housing. And so I think the vision that Summer kind of proved to everyone was that progressives do fight for a Green New Deal. They do fight for a Medicare for All. And those are things we must deliver on. And in the path to delivering on that, we have to deliver results every day right now. You know, we have to create green jobs today. We have to clean air and water in the Mon Valley, where it has the worst pollution in the country right now. And so it's looking like results every day, but still staying true to those values by saying we're still fighting for a Green New Deal. We're still fighting for a future where no one has healthcare debt. And we're going to do that on a day by day basis by delivering this money right now. And we're still not beholden to corporations or CEOs. And so I think Summer has kind of shown you a model for how progressives can build that vision across the country. If it can happen in Western PA, it can happen anywhere.
I'll also just come in to say last year, as we've talked about, was APAC's first way into elections ever, right? And it was like something like 26 million across 9 different races. Summers was the only working class candidate that was able to put the coalition together to like overcome a lot of that. But like, you know, a big part of the election, separate from the ads, but something that was really big is like, you know, at the end of last year, APAC threatened that they were going to spend about $100 million to unseat the entire squad and named Summer as one of their top targets. Republican billionaires ended up jumping in and spending at the end of the race. And it was very, very important. And I think for Summer, but also for progressives in general, to talk about how much they've delivered right now, while we're also have the foresight and vision to fight for the future that we want. But that was a big part of how we had to prepare this year. We know that we're not going to be able to match them necessarily and the campaigns dollar for dollar. But what we can do and what we did a lot in this race, in addition to paid media, was a lot of earned media. And it was a lot of earned media that was informed by a lot of research that we at Justice Democrats led well over a year ago, after basically studying the ads that we just talked about that happened in the 2022 race, to be able to inform and understand how Democratic voters think about AIPAC, think about some of these attacks. And what we learned through that process is that there is very little anybody that is outside of the Beltway in Washington, particularly Democratic voters in all of these primaries, know about AIPAC. And once they know about AIPAC, they see where the funding is coming from, particularly how much alignment there is with Donald Trump's mega donors, when pretty much every terrible GOP that you can think of, those type of donors. And so there was a lot of, in addition to the paid media effort, there was a ton of Summer's own time, her campaign, Justice Democrats, and a whole coalition that ultimately ended up launching a Reject AIPAC campaign earlier this year. But it was informed by over a year's worth of research, really trying to obviously balance what we all know to be true about the popularity of our ideas, and also gathering as much intel and data as we can, because we know we're going to get outspent, about what messages are going to actually be the most effective when pushing it back against this massive right-wing network. And I think that piece is really important, because we've seen, you know, stories coming out of this race that, oh, the politics are changing, right? See, you know, all of that, which I think is very true and is a huge credit to all of the students on the front lines right now, the activists and organizers that are out in the streets. But it's also takes a lot of work in advance to prepare for the onslaught that comes. In 2022, it was recruiting a candidate like Summer. And I think this year it was really making intentional investments into gathering data, messaging, everything that we needed to supply our candidates, our allies in the movement, and media and everybody behind the scenes to make sure they knew who AIPAC was and what is resonating amongst Democratic voters.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And what was a huge win for you guys, you know, AIPAC, Super PAC ended up not deciding to spend in the race. Now, Jeff Yass, you know, Republican billionaire with close ties to Benjamin Netanyahu, we'll talk about him in a minute. My colleague, Kale Lacy, you know, did some great reporting on him this cycle and previously. But on the AIPAC point, I'm curious if there was a moment that you realized, okay, we have done enough work and we have built up a strong enough foundation that AIPAC isn't going to want to come in here. Because it's not as if with $100 million potential spend, AIPAC necessarily lacked the resources to wage a losing campaign. There's a weird dynamic where they don't want to lose. And maybe you can talk about this dynamic that is not necessarily intuitive, but my understanding of it is that, okay, yes, they could raise $5 million and have a 5% chance of beating Summer Lee, you know, late in the game. And why not? Because they have $100 million, why not spend the $5 million? My understanding of it is eventually it does then get more difficult down the line to go to those same donors and say, okay, now 2026, 2028, we want to spend another $100 million, another $100 million. They might say, well, wait a minute. You know, you've spent $5 million against her like three times in a row. At some point, you know, $15 million starts to add up So, why do you think they didn't spend?
Yeah, you know, I think what happened here is APEC got a little ahead of themselves. I think like at the start of this cycle, they were like, we're going to spend $100 million and we're going to take out every member of the squad. And you saw them naming everyone, that they were going to target everyone. It wasn't just Corey and Jamal. It was Ayana. It was Summer. It was Rashida. It was Ilhan. And that was their goal. And I think as time progressed and as they saw, one, these people are raising amazing amounts of money. They are organizing the coalition. They're not going to be taken by surprise like they were last cycle. They started walking that back. And they started saying, okay, no, we're actually going to focus on these six. And now we're just going to focus on these four. And they actively tried to recruit in Summer's race. You know, they looked for a challenger. Akila actually reported on that. They tried to find local electeds to primary Summer and they couldn't. They polled in that district. We saw it. We saw a very classic Melman poll in that district. And I think what they found was, you know, it's not viable for them. And so now, obviously, they have sort of rebranded and said, you know what we're going to do? We're just focusing on Jamal and Corey. Because like you said, you're absolutely right. I think halfway through this cycle, they realized they aren't going to get a bunch of W's by trying to challenge every member of the squad. And despite the fact that they do have just the money to kind of waste on those races, they saw that, one, that they were losing their grip over the Democratic Party, just writ large, as they were going through this, as I think a Clinton administration official said, a political identity crisis. But also, like you said, their donors are not going to accept just five losses and two wins. So you even saw them, you know, spend a few thousand dollars in Danny Davis's race so that they could say they won that race as if they were a part of that W. And so now it's clear, one, for us, that after Summer's victory, APEC has already kind of failed at their one goal at the start of the cycle, which was to defeat the squad. And their goal now is to double down and spend millions of dollars against the former middle school principal and nurse to show that they're GOP billionaire donors, that they can win in a cycle. And I think now that's why those two races especially feel like the fight for kind of the soul of our Democratic Party.
And Jeff Yass is a different question because, you know, he doesn't have to raise the money. He himself is a billionaire. So if he wants to, you know, repeatedly lose, that's his billionaire prerogative. And in fact, that does seem to be almost the only thing that he does in Pennsylvania. It's extraordinary how much money he puts into races across the state, not just in Summer's race, that he then loses. What was the effect of the amount of money he spent? And will it be over $1 million by the end, do you think? What was your read on how much he put in? I know by primary time, it looked like only about $800,000 or $900,000 had been publicly reported.
Yeah, I believe it was about $800K that's been publicly reported. We'll see if it's more. And, you know, I think, like we've kind of said, call it Moderate PAC, call it APAC, call it DMFI, call it United Democracy Project. I think the pattern we're seeing across the country is GOP billionaires finding their pet project super PAC to kind of target Black and Brown Democrats and progressives in these primaries to, you know, elect right-wing Democrats that are aligned with corporate power and these super PACs and billionaires. And so I think Jeffrey Yass, you know, as you noted, is kind of, to anyone in Pennsylvania who's involved in politics, is like enemy number one to anything you care about, be it abortion rights or public education or democracy. And so it totally makes sense that someone like Summer Lee kind of poses as a personal threat to someone, to a Republican billionaire like that. I think it was, you know, good luck to him on his money and continued spending in failures. But I think it was a massive mistake for these people to go out and try and find a Republican billionaire to spend in this race, because that is a very clear story that Summer had been telling before that. You know, when we were talking about waiting for APAC to come in, we were waiting for the Bernie Marcuses and Jan Coombs and Paul Singers of the world to come and spend millions of dollars in this race. And sure, they didn't come in, but we just had a different billionaire with a different name that albeit was known to more Pennsylvanians. And so I think really what you did is localize a Republican billionaire in that fight to make this fight even more clear about who Summer is and who her opponents are. And I think it's the same struggle you were seeing with Jamal Bowman and George Latimer and Corey Bush and Wesley Bell. You know, you have the Bernie Marcuses and Paul Singers on Wesley Bell and George Latimer's side, and you have everyday people and the grassroots movement behind Corey Bush and Jamal Bowman.
And in the time that I've got left with you, let's talk about those two races. So the nurse that you mentioned, Corey Bush, and the principal you mentioned, Jamal Bowman, do have candidates. They were where they were able to recruit challengers that they're comfortable with. Let's talk about Bush. She's running against Wesley Bell and another candidate who's in the race, which maybe could help Cori Bush. I'm curious for your take, because it's in my experience, it's easier to take somebody out if you just have a one-on-one shot. But how's Bush looking against Wesley Bell? He's a, you know, quote unquote progressive prosecutor. Like, we covered his race, I think, in 2018 when he first ran. He was that kind of Soros-backed progressive prosecutor organization rallied behind him. And so he had been not necessarily that far from Bush, but when it seems like when he saw that AIPAC was going in, you know, full speed against Cori Bush, he dropped out of the Senate race, which he was going to lose just running to raise his profile, and decided to run for the House instead to kind of ride this river of AIPAC cash. How's the Bush-Bell race looking?
Yeah, I think, you know, that race is really interesting because you have kind of a man who is, like you said, running against Josh Hawley, who I think, you know, dropped out for whatever amount of money AIPAC said that they would get in for, to now be running against Cori Bush. And now he shares donors with Josh Hawley. You know, he's taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from Josh Hawley's donors and other anti-abortion Republican Missouri politicians' donors. And so I don't think anything could embody more of what kind of an empty vessel, an empty suit looks like than Wesley Bell going against Cori Bush. You know, all he has really spoken on is his record as a prosecutor. You don't hear any vision for everyday people in that district. You don't hear any policies or things that he cares about. It's really just referencing, you know, what small levels of reforms he may have been a part of at the prosecutorial level. While what he's going to do is let AIPAC do all the attacks against, you know, this working class Black woman, former nurse who has, you know, been an abortion rights champion, been a champion against insurrectionists, been a champion for everyday people sleeping on the steps of the Capitol to stop an eviction moratorium. You know, the contrast couldn't be clearer in that race between those two folks. And I think it makes sense that a Cori Bush is such a massive threat to the kind of Republican billionaires and right-wing movement that backs AIPAC, because, you know, nothing is a greater threat than a former single mother who's lived homelessness, who's lived through sexual and gun violence, who is willing to tell her abortion story and is willing to put her body on the line for everyday people in that district when, you know, I promise you, Wesley Bell is not sleeping on any steps of the Capitol to stop an eviction moratorium.
Cori Bush also learned from an unsuccessful race in 2018 when, you guys backed her then. Then she wins in 2020, wins re-election easily in 2022. I'm curious how big an issue is Israel-Palestine in this race? Because I wonder, you know, like you had said, in 2022, none of the AIPAC Super PAC ads ever touched on the issue. But the salience of it was lower because it was pre-October 7th and there wasn't a war and a plausible genocide, according to the ICJ, going on. So has the fact that AIPAC is pouring so much money into the race itself been registering in the race?
Honestly, I feel like they're continuing to not run publicly, like ads on digital, at least right now, in those districts that are focused on what's happening in Gaza right now. They're continuing, it seems like, to do the same playbook as they've done. They poll very early about what attacks they want to hit on that are recycled from what they've had in previous years, except updated with information about particular issues that are really impacting certain voters. So we haven't seen it, and we haven't seen AIPAC Super PAC starting to spend. But what they have done is they've bundled over $1 million directly to Wesley Bell and George Latimer's campaigns that they're now starting as those individual campaigns to spend. So they are definitely here. They are previewing, you know, Cori and Jamal's opponents as their primary at their conferences, where they're fundraising and bundling money. So they're definitely involved in the races. And I think recognize the same thing we do, which is that Democratic primary voters, for the most part, don't know who AIPAC is. And when they do know who AIPAC is and where the money comes from, they don't like that it comes from, it's basically obfuscating and funneling in GOP Donald Trump money into Democratic primaries to challenge these incumbents. And so I think that it's something that we're going to continue to deal with. I think, as Usama mentioned, there's a lot on what throughout Wesley Bell's career before he decided to switch over to challenging the first Black congresswoman the state of Missouri has ever had. Like, he is also not someone that has done well with his public service career, and that will be continuing to come out throughout the primary. But I'll also just say in Jamal's race, it's also, we're talking about two very different districts, right? Two very different media markets. In St. Louis, like, what we're worried about, right? It's you, the campaign and AIPAC will be able to run a lot. It's a relatively cheaper media market. If you move over to New York 16, it's very different. It's New York City. It's definitely who has the most, can spend the most on things like cable and paid communications and stuff like that. It's also the place where redistricting has been something that the local political establishments have been very much, you know, as Jamal in particular, and candidates like Corey are truly, you know, the, as Usama said, the former principal, the former nurse, they are the most working class champions in Congress right now. And they're not like the politicos in the back rooms dealing with all of the redistricting stuff. And so there have been systematically over the past like two cycles for Jamal, a carving out of historic Black neighborhoods in his district. Now, we still feel like we're, you know, we are in this fight, but it's definitely been, you know, a process to get here. And I'd say that Latimer, George Latimer, who's the Jamal Bowman's opponent, is the former county executive. He's also been more similar to, I'd say, like an incumbent, because he's been in the local and state political establishment for over 20 years. So this is not someone that is, you know, some random outsider coming in, and even to a large extent, Bell, except maybe less so. This is someone that has been actively known to people as executive person for some time. So I think in Jamal's race and Corey's race, there are different challenges. But I think the big piece is that these are two people that are challenging historic elections, representatives to these seats, with really not a whole lot of cause other than this issue, but then won't actually campaign and run on it in the same way.
To your point on Palestine and this issue and whether it's actually coming up, I think, you know, the truth is the reason AIPAC doesn't run ads on Israel last cycle or likely this cycle is because they can't win on that issue. Not only one, is it an issue that is not necessarily the issue that a majority of voters are necessarily voting on, but it's also not an issue where their policies are actually popular among Democratic voters. You know, where the squad was at, where Jamal, Corey, Summer, and everyone was at since, you know, 6 months ago has been where Democratic voters have been. They overwhelmingly support a ceasefire. They overwhelmingly support conditioning military funding to Israel. And it's not voters who are evolving over this cycle as the genocide unfolds in front of us. It is Democratic politicians and leaders who are catching up to where their voters have been for months. And so that is why you see a Chuck Schumer speak on the floor of Congress or Nancy Pelosi sign on to letters conditioning funding, or, you know, more Dems than ever voting against military funding to Israel. That is showing, you know, one, not only where the squad's leadership is, which is at the front of the Democratic Party, but also that Democratic voters are right there with them. And finally, eventually, some other folks are catching up at, you know, you won't hear George Latimer and Wesley Bell talk about those things. You won't hear them condemn even the killing of World Central Aid kitchen workers when even President Biden is condemning it and everyone else is, because AIPAC won't let them. And it just shows how deeply, one, right-wing the policies are that AIPAC supports, because the only other people who kind of espouse the same views are the Mike Johnsons of the world and the Donald Trumps of the world.
How much you still hear about that crazy fire alarm thing? Is that a problem for Bowman?
I don't think it's a real problem. You know, I think if you look at his Twitter replies, you will see a lot of folks who have MAGA in their bio comment and reply in it. But I don't think it's an issue for voters who actually care about substance, because they know what Bowman has done for that district. They know what he's been fighting for. And they also remember what he got to Congress for in the first place, which was defeating a politician that's very similar to who we're seeing right now. You know, George Latimer is just Elliot Engel 2.0. And what we had already seen when Jamal first got elected was a career politician who did not care about his district, who didn't even live in his district, and had left behind Black and brown communities that Jamal was actively working with as a principal of a middle school. And so, you know, there are folks who are in the community and who show up for the community, and there are folks who show up when it's politically advantageous. And I think Elliot Engel and George Latimer are the latter.
Would it be fair to call both of them underdogs at this point? What's your sense on the races, and when are the primaries?
I mean, I think that they're definitely incumbents. We're walking in as incumbents in this fight, and also they've unfortunately got $100 million threat coming down the pike. And so, as working class candidates, as a working class movement that is backing them up, like, it does mean that we've got a lot to overcome, but we haven't. We've done it before, and so it is very possible. But it's going to be just like everybody that came together to protect Summer against GOP billionaires. We need the whole of our movement, organizations, donors, everybody to do the same for Corey and Jamal, because they are going to be hit with disingenuous lies and attacks. And because these primaries are really, as Usama was talking about, an existential fight, not only in the fight to defend Palestinian lives and rights in this moment in DC, but for all marginalized people in this country who are at risk of, and because we're at risk of losing some of our two biggest powerful megaphones. And as folks that have been with them and recruited them, we can tell you that it is a lot easier to defend them than it is to get back these seats. And so this is a really big fight. And it's because of our success over the years that we are being targeted so heavy. They want to protect their investment. They know that it's under threat. They are losing a generational fight. That's why they're on the ropes. And former Bill Clinton officials are talking about them having an identity crisis despite having such a massive war chest. And it's showing that money is not the only thing that matters here, but we definitely do need it. We need to keep an amount to stay competitive. Jamal's election is going to be June 25th, and then a couple weeks before that is early vote. And early vote, we're also treating as just important as election day.
Cori Bush's primary is on August 5th, and Jamal's primary is on June 25th.
Those are probably going to be pretty low turnout affairs.
I think in general, most elections, unfortunately, in this country that aren't presidency are low turnout elections, which means that we've got to really hustle to turn our people out in a way that, unfortunately, the millions of dollars that are coming down the pike are meant to suppress. And even right now, with the $100 million threat, they want us to be cynical. They want us to think it is impossible to overcome that level of spending. And Summer's race just showed that that's not the case. And the work that we've been doing alongside dozens of other national progressive groups and our Palestinian and Muslim community, especially in this moment, have been to overcome that and keep them out. So I think that it's unlikely we can keep them fully out of Jamal and Corey's race, but we're walking in as the incumbents. We've got a plan to win. We just need the money, resources, and the whole movement to come together in the same way that we did to elect him in the first place. And we got this.
All right. Well, Usama, Alexandra, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Ryan.
That was Usama Andrabi and Alexandra Rojas, and that's our show. Deconstructed is a production of The Intercept. This episode was produced by Laura Flynn. The show is mixed by William Stanton. Legal review by Sean Musgrave and Elizabeth Sanchez. Leonardo Fireman transcribed this episode. Our theme music was composed by Bart Warshaw. And I'm Ryan Grimm, DC Bureau Chief for The Intercept. If you'd like to support our work, go to theintercept.com/give. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show so you can hear it every week. And please go and leave us a rating or a review. It helps people find the show. Also, check out our other podcast, Intercepted. If you want to give us additional feedback, email us at podcasts@theintercept.com. Put deconstructed in the subject line. Otherwise, we might miss your message. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.